Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSS Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you.
Hello and good morning, everyone. And sorry, it's not Friday yet. It's Tuesday. I know it's a long week, but it's not Friday yet. So you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, located on Burnaby, the campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and the Katsi Nations, and that's where I also work and research and do a lot of volunteers, I guess, commitments. So for today, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the issue that's ongoing in South China Sea, particularly looking at some of the environmental impacts, like the environmental footprint, as we understand, of these conflicts that happen in the sea and how they relate to not just that region, but it's an international issue, because the carbon emissions and climate change has become central to policy making. But it is also important to include this issue when you talk about the international disputes such as South China Sea, which is so focused on the sea link, understanding the ocean's boundary, economic zones of different countries, and all the international players that we have in the South China Sea. And I will just get started with some sort of discussion around it. I'm using quite a few references to draw upon. So these are not my opinions. These are ideas that flow around in different journalist spheres. And these are fact-checked, I hope so. And also some academic sources that I used for working on a paper that I was writing, which was looking at environmentalism and environmental security in the area of Southeast Asia, so that region particularly. But I think it is very relevant to talk about in regards to the South China Sea. As we see, there is some news always coming out of that region because it is so volatile with two of the biggest world's power rivalry happening there. One of them is growing power and one of them is a global hegemon. So all sorts of global interesting playground that is the South China Sea. I'll be talking about that. And before I do that, I do have a song that I want to play, which is by a Canadian singer and songwriter, Dana Jawanski, and it is called Good Instead of Bad. And Yesterday's Gone. It's kind of like two songs, one after the other, and it's really good. And really sets the tone for a Tuesday morning, I think. And that's what I'm going to play for you right now. And then we'll get into the discussion about what even environmental security means, how it's relevant in the case of South China Sea. So let's hear from Dana Gawanski first.
We could doing things a deer. Feet so deep, but what a hide. With you no longer by my side. I don't know what's right. And I forgot what I like. And it used to be something good. Now I don't know if I understood. As yesterday is gone, yesterday is gone. Miles and miles and miles away. The past gets distant with each day.
So that was a really great start. And the note that Donna set for us right here at CGSF. And now I'm going to, I was just thinking as the songs are playing that I should perhaps start by breaking down a little bit what their dispute looks like in the South China Sea and what is it even about? Because I think a lot of news coverage is given to this issue, but it's important for people who have not encountered this before to also understand, and also welcoming and opening spaces for those people to also understand what is happening. So essentially, there is a sea which is called the South China Sea, and it's part of an international, let's say, playground, because this offers obviously so much oil. These resources include marine life resources, abundance of fishery. There is a lot of minerals except from oil, and there's also natural gas in there. And most importantly, the Strait of Malacca, which is part of the South China Sea, is a small strait through which a lot of the international goods transfer. So there's a lot of transportation importance of this particular area and this sea, because a lot of stuff that comes in from Asia, Africa, transfers all the way through this sea link into the different ports in China, Japan, and towards the United States sometimes. So this water has a strategic importance in international sphere because of the sheer amount of communication and transportation of goods that happen through this region. And obviously there is a lot of resources like marine biodiversity, fisheries. It also enables a lot of deep sea mining avenues, and also offers fisheries, which is a staple and which is the biggest, second biggest hub of the seafood that we get in the entire world comes from that region in the Southeast Asia. Particularly the South China Sea issue is based on the countries who make different claims about mainly two set of islands called the Spratly Islands and the Paracels. Most importantly, Spratlys are larger in number. These small islands are spread out a little more than Paracels. So a lot of times the South China Sea dispute is just talked in the terms of Spratly Islands. There are different reasons as well, but Spratly Islands is like talked more in relevance with the South China Sea. And part of it, the problem of the territorial claim on these islands comes from different countries EEZ, which is the exclusive economic zone. So it is this area of 12 nautical miles from your coastline to the sea. So that's the maximum that a country has access to in its exclusive economic zone. So it can carry out whatever economic and developmental and sustainable efforts it wants to. So that is the limit. After that, it's international waters, and it has different UN laws to operate as to who can use those seas, what kind of operations can happen, what kind of military presence can country have in those international waters, and so on and so forth. But particularly for this economic exclusive economic zone, it's like this is the part of your own country's boundary. So you have the access to these waters to do all sorts of economic and development extractions, development goals, plans, mining setups, and all those things. So that's essentially each country has the access to, so they can do that legally. So that comes, that provision comes from the UNCLOS. So that is the UN Convention of the Law of the Sea. So according to that, each country has this entitled amount of region in its zone from its coastline. So that is how different countries like the Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, Brunei are claiming that the areas in the South China Sea belong to them. So which means that, I wish I could show you guys the map, but so essentially, a lot of the Spratly Islands, according to this 200 nautical mile of exclusive economic zone, EEZ, would be claimed by different countries. Like most of it, well, will be divided between Philippines, Malaysia, Vietnam. But the claims that China bases actually is out of the 200 nautical miles of its coastal lands. So it's not under the UNCLOS. But the country bases its claims on its historical evidences, which include having the map of its kingdom from the very early on. And it claims that essentially it is the whole of the South China Sea is its part, and it is its exclusive economic zone. So that area which comes under, which China claims that it comes under its own territories, sometimes referred to as the nine dash line. And the territory is demarcated, which is called the nine dash line, extends hundreds of miles south and east from the most southern province in China, which is Henan. So essentially, if I were to summarize the different claims that countries have, is that China says most of the South China Sea, which includes Spratly Islands, is theirs. Whereas other countries who are basing their claims on the UN Convention of the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS, are claiming different parts of the Spratly Islands. So there's a whole discussion as to whose claims are valid, what sort of joint contributions each country could do, what sort of exploitation, I would say, of the sea. So who gets to use the sea to do whatever they want to because of its high resource value, strategic value, the boost that it gives to the economy, and also to because waters are really important, because not only they hold a lot of military, but it also is used in a lot of like industry infrastructure, and especially this water region holds a lot of LNG and oil resources. So each country needs oil, because we don't understand that we have to move away from fossil fuel. We are so dependent that we still run by this idea that we need to capture all the resources that nature avails us with. So that is essentially the South-China Sea dispute. And there have been various clashes because the presence of China, who is a global power in itself, and the presence of the United States, which happens through the Philippines, because the Philippines and the United States have a military treaty, which implies, this is not quoted, this is not in quotations, but if I were to break it down, it is like, if any country were to attack Philippines unprovoked, so Philippines did not provoke the action, the United States would stand with the Philippines and provide all the military support. And so, yeah, like, Philippines and the United States are military partners, or like, they have the military alliance, military treaty. So under that, there is a lot of presence of the United States in the sea, which includes having submarines, all those warships and fighter jets as well. Some of them, the Seventh Fleet is also present in the sea, because it is essentially the treaty between the Philippines and the United States. But with South China Sea dispute, the problem is that China has been trying to extend its coastal line so that it can actually claim the whole of the South China Sea. So to extend its coastal line, what is it is doing is setting up artificial islands to increase its coastal line. And that would mean that it would have more and more area of the South China Sea. So that is the strategy that the People's Republic of China is undergoing. But there's also an interesting angle which Taiwan brings in, which is called sometimes the Republic of China, which is its official name, is that it also has claims in the South China dispute. But China being China, obviously, yeah, Taiwan, it doesn't consider Taiwan, so it wouldn't consider the claims that Taiwan makes. So that is the international things happening. And there is also Australia, which is just at the bottom of the South China Sea. So everything is happening just above its coastal line. So the presence of true great world powers being present and trying to exert this sort of military presence in the region is an interesting one to keep an eye on. And as I was saying before, the environmental resources that this region holds is key to why these claims are being made and what is happening here. Because we know that the non-renewable resources like the oil and the fossil fuels, they are depleting fast, but the problem of climate change is rising up fast as well. So what would it mean to have this dispute exist when we are in this sort of climate crisis situation is what I'm going to talk in our segment here. But I'm just going to play one more song, and then we'll get right into the angle of environmental security here in this discussion. But before that, I have a song by Eva.
If you want me to confide in you, then just one. I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As an industry grows, companies owned by white men tend to profit most.
Folks with more resources, longer histories of wealth, and larger networks are able to tap into industries more quickly and take up lots of market share.
Erica Simmons is Vice President of Equity and Workforce Development at the Solar Energy Industries Association, or SEIA. Her group wants to make sure that as the demand for solar grows, history does not repeat itself.
Who owns the businesses? Who gets to take advantage of the wealth-building opportunities of this industry is super important.
So to promote diversity in the industry, SEIA created a free online database of companies working in solar that are owned by women, veterans, and minorities, including Black and brown people and members of LGBTQ+ communities. The database makes it easier to find and hire these companies. And Simmons Group provides businesses in the database with information about networking and other opportunities.
We have an unprecedented opportunity to welcome more diverse voices into the industry.
So the transition to clean energy can also be part of a transition to a more equitable economy. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
So that was a brief, interesting fact about some of the things that interest me, that is the transition to a cleaner energy and the role of solar energy in there. And I love the work that the Yale program is doing with regards to climate change, and I definitely highly recommend to check it out because it's super interesting. Coming back to environmental security and the South China dispute and how these are somehow intertwined. So just to like break down this idea of environmental security. So essentially, because with the increase in global environmental problems like excessive floodings, drought periods, and rising sea levels, there has been an interesting shift in how the environmental politics happen. With global environment changing and affecting directly major national goals like its economy, its trade, how we understand security, how population's health and development happens, there is a big part of it which is set and understood through the lens of climate change. And this came in also with a lot of scientific investment and research investment that has been done in the field of understanding, for example, clean energy initiatives. What does it mean to transition from fossil fuels into green energy and all those things? So that has been very central to politics in a lot of the ways. And this attention has also involved major international conferences like the IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the COP 27, which happened last year, which is the Conference of Parties, the UNEP, which is the United Nations Environmental Program, which looks into understanding different aspects of human impacts on climate change. But still, it is relevant to discuss the idea of environmental security because in international studies and understanding how politics on an international level happen, there's an interesting link that scholars have highlighted between climate change and conflict. So academics have highlighted that there is a correlation, which is sort of also debated because climate may not be the direct reason of a conflict, but it is definitely a contributing factor. Because it acts as a correlation between the